strange place.
I think it looks like the village I've seen in all those old horror movies.
I'm a monster and I'm going to drink your blood.
Don't look that way. Quiet.
Well, he was just fooling around.
This is not the place to fool around.
Don't tell me that you still believe in that Dracula stuff.
Yes, madam, we do. We of this village still believe and worry that he will come back.
This is creepy. Dracula, that's only in movies. It's not real.
You think not? Well, I only hope that you never see him.
I think we shall go back to New York in the morning.
Dracula, I don't believe it.
Come, you look tired. I have two rooms here. You can share them.
Being so very kind. Why, look, out of the window. The sun is nearly set. All I can see is a little bit of it beside the mountain. It glows a fierce red light.
The mountain is the mountain of doom. But come, down this hall to your rooms.
How I could have used a magazine like mine. But it would be 30 years before Famous Monsters of Filmland was born. At that time, Bela Lugosi was dead. It had been 3 decades since Lon Chaney had been seen upon the screen. And I feared that that young generation of boys and girls would have forgotten them altogether. So I determined that Bela Lugosi should live eternal, that Lon Chaney should never die. And for 190 issues, I brought Halloween to the kids of the country every month for nearly 25 terror-filled years.
Welcome to Bob's Slacktime Funhouse. I'm your rapidly rotating prayer partner, the Reverend Susie the Floozy, and tonight I'm going to be going off the lesson plan because, there's a special tragic circumstance. We're losing something precious, something that's near and dear to all subgeniuses. We may be losing our monsters. Because by the time the show airs, there's a very good chance that we will have lost Forrest J. Ackerman, our beloved king of monsters. So the show is for you, Forry. We love you.
Thank you.
program you are about to hear, Bob's Slacktime Funhouse, is parody, satire, and comedy. Any reference to Bob, the Church of the Subgenius, religion, politics, or any other touchy subjects is intended only as humor and should cast no reflection on the high standards of WREK Atlanta, its staff, or that of Georgia Tech.
This is Forrest J. Ackerman speaking to you from the year 2027. Welcome to Metropolis, my hometown. Population, estimated by my SLAN friend A.E. Van Vogt, approximately 60 million. I've lived here since I was 10 years old. It's the most exciting, fabulous city on the face of the earth, and under it, London, Los Angeles, New York, Paris, Berlin, Tokyo, all rolled and roiled into one. Just imagine. When I say the magic name, Metropolis, it is as though I combine the skyscraping dominance of the Empire State Building with the elegance of the Taj Mahal, the fame of the Eiffel Tower, and the eternal mystery of the Sphinx of Egypt. Metropolis, the new Babel, architectural masterpiece of monolithic magnificence. The skyscrapers of the 20th century dwarfed by the towering stratoscapers of the 21st. The title belongs on your Hugo Award shelf, along with The World Below, The House on the Borderland, Last and First Men, The Demolished Men, Limbo, 1984. Science and fantasy, horror and beauty, mystery, menace, madness, magnificence, significance. Once in a lifetime, all the elements were magically combined to create the imaginative classic, the film masterpiece supreme, Metropolis. This has been called a work of genius. I agree. In the next hour, you will have an experience in listening that will last you all the rest of your life. Mine ears have heard the glory of the coming of Metropolis in audio form. I've seen the film 84 times. I wouldn't be surprised but what I'll be listening to this another 84. Because for the first time, going beyond the film from which something like 9 reels were excised, you realize the entire tale of Metropolis. Every last word brought to life imaginatively, realistically, fantastically, an experience in listening which you will never forget. Metropolis. Metropolis. Metropolis.
Yes, Seekers, tonight's episode of Bob's Slacktime Funhouse is a tribute to our beloved Forrest J. Ackerman, the man who gave us all hope in the form of monsters. Oh, strangely enough, the day before I got the news about Forry, I happened to find a tape that I'd borrowed from St. Byron Werner and totally forgot. It's from an album that Forry did about robots, and it was titled The Tin Age, which, knowing Forry, that was a pun on two levels. It was a take on the Iron Age, and also probably one on the teenage, knowing him. Such a master of puns. And I have no doubt that he got some laughs out of the fact that he was gravely ill. I know, Forry. I know his sense of humor, and I know he couldn't have resisted that one. But, you know, while I don't have a lot of robot songs, I got a lot of monster songs. So let's just enjoy the wonderful gift that we had in Forrest J. Ackerman. For some of us, this man made us what we are today. And we can't thank him enough.
Hello, this is Forry Ackerman, editor of Famous Monsters of Filmland and Spacemen. I've heard from thousands and thousands of you fans since the world's original film monster magazine began in 1958, and many's the time I've wished I was the beast with a million eyes in order to read all your letters quicker. Well, having heard from all of you, it seems only fair, doesn't it, that you should now hear from all of me. As you probably guessed, I'm Dr. Acula, and Carlon Torgosi, and his sister Vespertina. Vespertina is the Transylvanian word for bat. I'm also Weaver Wright, and Spencer Strong, and a long list of other names, including Mechanical Man and Robot Mitchum. I've been interested in robots for about 35 years. And as a boy of 10, I had the thrilling experience of seeing the great film masterpiece Metropolis when it was brand new. It was a silent picture produced in the mid-20s, and the most unforgettable scene was when the robot was animated. When that smooth, streamlined, mechanical, humanoid figure was commanded to rise by Rotwang, its creator, and slowly, ever so slowly, an inch at a time, almost like Imhotep, the Egyptian mummy dead 3,700 years, the robot moved and came to life. You could almost hear the whirring as Rotwang, his artificial hand covered with a black leather glove, ordered his robot tricks, was in female form, you see, to rise from her chair and present her cold, steeled hand to John Masterman, the master of Metropolis, greatest city on Earth, in the year 2026. 2026, Come to think of it, that's quite a few years yet. You suppose we'll have to wait that long to see real robots? I doubt it. Actually, already the robots are among us. Robot chess players may not seem very alarming, and electronic calculators that can perform in a minute the work of 10 men laboring ceaselessly for 100 years are an obvious advantage. But what of the robot's missile in the sky? What of the robot that ran amok, murdered its creator? Of legendary origin is our first information about the artificial beings known as androids. Aristotle described a wooden Venus capable of movement. During the 3rd century B.C., a flying wooden pigeon was reported. In the 10th century A.D., we hear of the creation of an automatic talking head. The great genius Leonardo da Vinci built a moving metal lion for King Louis XII and also created a metal dragon. Leonard Maelzel, the man who invented the metronome, created a sensation during his lifetime with a musical android completed in 1807. He also demonstrated a chess machine which inspired Edgar Allan Poe to write Maelzel's Chessmen. In 1778, Baron Kempelen of Bohemia publicly demonstrated the first talking robot, the first machine to speak text through artificial means. A publication of the day reported that, quote, monstrous things spoke with the voice of a 3 to 4 year old child in a distinct, clear, and slow voice, all syllables very audibly.
It may be that Kempelen's talking robot sounded something like this.
In the French play The Revolt of the Machines, huge engines, super tractors, gigantic cranes, mechanical saws, dynamic dredgers, even psychological thought-reading devices clash with one another in the hall of a great exhibition. During the night, the machines break through the walls of the auditorium and run wild in the streets, destroying homes, knocking over towers, devastating fields. Military might is mobilized and army artillery is dispatched to destroy the machine monsters. But the guns and tanks and cannons refuse to fire on their fellow machines and instead join the rebels. A few human beings escape and from a mountainside watch the destruction of their man-made world. Finally, the foreman of the machine succeeds in turning them against one another. And in the ensuing civil war, they completely destroy each other. But the foreman is already at work on newer, even more monstrous machines. And the likelihood is that it will happen all over again.
You better ask my mama how to make a monster. I'm a creature from a black leather lagoon. And I'm a beautiful monster from outer space too. Learn how to shake my hips, I feel my inner sanctum sinking and give me tips, and then I find them. I'm a creature from a black leather lagoon.
Millennium One, W.A. Dwiggins pictured another possible revolt of the robots. Millennium One is a frightening play about Homo Grub, subterranean man, hiding from murderous machines which possess incredibly powerful means of destruction. At one point in the play, a human being named Blackmaster encounters Point 33 Plus, a robot. And the robot says, "In the beginning was man. Man created all things. Man created robot in his own image." Blackmaster interrupts, No, not like himself. That was not the idea. Much better than himself. Finer. Stronger. Man made you and we were proud of you. But we made you too strong. You broke away from us. We lost control of you. You trampled us into the dust. So now we come to turn you back into earth again, into the salts of metals, back into the earth out of which we made you.
And last.
Inevitably, we come to R.U.R., Rossum's Universal Robots, the famous play that introduced the word robot into the English language. The story, as summarized by Sam Moskowitz, is a tale laid in the near future on an island whose exact location is not specified. Here, a formula to chemically produce artificial humans for use as workers and servants had been adapted to mass production. The manufacturers justify their position on the grounds that eventually robots will free men from all toil and a utopia will emerge. Unfortunately, one of the chemists alters the formula, and the robots, who have hitherto been without emotions, assume the desires for freedom and domination that previously has been characteristic only of the human race. The emotionally advanced leaders among the robots organize a revolt of their minions, which now number millions in key positions throughout the world. The rule of man is cast off, and the human race is ruthlessly exterminated. At bay on their little island, the robot manufacturers suspensefully stave off robot attack, but are betrayed by the president of the Humanitarian League, who even burns Rossum's original formula for the creation of robots. Remorselessly, the robots destroy all but one man whom they command to rediscover Rossum's formula. They offer him the world if he can help them rediscover the secret of the creation of life. However, he is only a builder, not a scientist, and cannot duplicate the method. In the end, mutant robots named Helena and Primus become the Adam and Eve of the new android world.
Hey, mister. No, up here. What you digging for? It's a secret, kid, but I guess I can tell you. We're digging for buried treasure. Wow, really? How'd it get in Mr. Pinkster's backyard? It was put there by, monsters, yeah. This is monster treasure. Cool, hey. My dad's got a shovel, can I help too? Sorry, kid, I don't think so. Okay, Tony, leave these men alone. They have work to do. But I want to help find monster treasure. Can I, Mr. Pinkster? Can I, please? Don't give me any of your back talk, young man. Just climb down from there and let these men get back to work. Your name isn't Mr. Pinkster. It's Mr. Stinkster. Later, at Tony's house, I don't want to hear another word out of you. Just settle down and go to sleep. Okay, good night, Mom. 30 seconds later. Wow, I wonder what kind of treasure monsters would bury. I wish I could. Hey, something's moving down there. Jeez, looks like one of those monsters. Mom, Dad, come quick, it's a monster. All right, Tony, what is it this time? Look, monsters in Mr. Pinkster's backyard, I'm not kidding. There's nothing down there but a hole. I think you've been watching a few too many spook shows for your own good. But it really was there, Dad, really. Do you want me to plug in your nightlight, son? Ah, Dad, that's baby stuff. 1 hour later. There it is again. But it's carrying something. Looks like a man. Oh, no. Now it's crawling back in the hole with him. Oh, no. Mom! I'm losing my patience with you, young man. If you don't... Mom? Could you plug in my nightlight? I promise I'll be good and go to sleep.
In the films, robots, androids, and humanoids came to the screen in Alita, an early Russian space film of a trip to Mars and the finding there of a robot civilization. In Captain Video, the Colossus of New York, the day the Earth stood still with the Great Gort, the heroic robot from space, Devil Girl from Mars, Forbidden Planet with Robbie, Target Earth, Tobor the Great, the Twonky about a crazy mixed-up TV set from the future that could move about, Vampires Over London with Bela Lugosi, and many, many others. Television gave us the notable Alfred Bester play, Murder and the Android. Now, if you will, accompany me on a journey to the future and a visit to a robot factory. Mr. Wells has kindly lent me his time machine, and Mr. Powell has graciously taught me how to operate it, so that we'll not only get to the future, but be sure of getting back. There's one thing you must understand, however, before we take off. We can only go as observers, and cannot actually intermingle. If we were to get into the future and become involved, there could be some disastrous results. I wonder if I went back to 1920... so that I never saw Metropolis. Why, then this record might never have existed. So whatever you do, don't leave the electronic field of our time machine. Okay? Fasten your safety belt.
Gargantua came ashore 30 minutes ago at the mouth of the Sakai River. Land, air, and sea units of the nation's defense force have gone into action in an effort to prevent the huge green monster from retreating back into the ocean, and of course to destroy it.
We'll be right back. him into a trap where we can destroy him with our deadly laser.
This is the end then.
Wow, we traveled so fast that here we are in 2050 already. Say, isn't that a nifty rocket car that robot is assembling? Doesn't look like it needs any type of tires or wheels. What an amazing sight over there, suspended in midair. A great luminescent sign. Must be supported by an anti-gravitic principle. Let's see, it says why... Yes, it's the three laws of robotics propounded by the great Dr. Asimov back in the middle of the 20th century. The red sign reads, a robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. The yellow one says, a robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. And the white one, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. Very sensible rules. Robots must... Good heavens, a cable snap! It's holding together by a shred of metal, and the man there, the foreman, right below, a car frame dangling over his head. I don't think he sees the danger, but... Well, the robot's super-sensitive photoelectric cells must have detected the danger. Yeah, the robot's now leaping at the startled man who thinks he's gone mad and is attacking him. Now he looks up and he sees the danger too late. At the last moment, the robot has swept up the foreman in its huge steel arms and tossed him out of the path of the plummeting steel object. The dazed man is being helped to his feet by two other robots. He looks at the mass of twisted wreckage and realizes the robot who saved his life lies smashed underneath, smashed beyond repair. A faithful mechanical servant has saved his life at the sacrifice of its own. Well, that was some experience. Now just let me adjust the spatial controls and we'll move to another observation point.
Incredible is the word for the world's first monster musical. See in magnificent Eastman color the daring, dancing, enticing, and horrifying, the incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed-up zombies. From the innocence of music and laughter comes the twilight of terror. Along the midway, scantily clad dancers luring the young lovers into the sideshows. See the dancing girls of the carnival murdered by the incredible night creatures of the Midway.
I only know that something evil lies ahead for me.
An unspeakable pit of dismal subhuman monsters who drool and gibber, moaning for the thrill of revenge. Incredible are the songs, the gaiety, the zombie stomp of those who will stop living. And then the mix-up, trickery, and the device to ruin. See the hunchback of the Midway fight a duel of death with the mixed-up zombies. Turning men into monsters, twisted, tormented human vultures. Yearning to kill. Incredible creatures clutching at the thin threads of their miserable lives. Human vultures. Only the weird zombies remain.
Obey.
Who is the woman branded in birth wearing the wart of horror?
It's a beauty, Mark.
Do as Madame Estrella said.
The world's first monster musical. The incredibly strange creatures who stopped living and became mixed-up zombies.
a sign ahead. 50 miles to Rossum City. Population, 2 million. Robots. Speed limit, 200 miles per hour. Car literally flying down the road. Seems to be going faster than that. Uh-oh, a police plane has spotted it. It's zooming down, broadcasting instructions to stop. Well, I'll be. It's a robot at the controls of the car. And the police are robots, too. I see what's happened. The robot driver is a human passenger who's been hurt, and he's rushing him to a hospital. The robot police are now moving the man to their plane, and there they go. Wow, what a world. Wish I had time to stay here and sightsee all over the planet, but that sound you hear is the warning bell on my time machine letting me know it's time to return to our own world and our own time. Hang on.
The monster surfer. I give the whole dad's fright. I surf all day at Malibu, and I hide in the coffin at night.
Monster surfer. Monster surfer.
I am the monster surfer. On Grammys I place the curse, and I wouldn't be caught dead in a woody. I only drive my surfing hearse.
Monster surfer, monster surfer.
I am the monster surfer, unafraid of fire or sword, and I recharge myself daily with the electrodes on my board.
Monster surfer, monster surfer.
I am the monster. Monster surfer, I look horrible on the beach. I have long hair all over me, and I sure use a lot of bleach. Don't be afraid. Don't laugh at me. I just want to drink your bleach. Permit me to introduce myself. I am the monster surfer. Come upon my board. I wish to take you out into the ocean and visit with the bats, in the gulls, in the boards, and the surfs, and the surf.
Are you married?
Wasn't that something, that glimpse at the robotic world of the future? You know, something occurred to me while watching those automatons function. They look a lot like men, do much of man's work. I wonder if... Excuse me a second. Give me Frank Cohen, the electronics department, please. Hi, Frank. Forry Ackerman. Hey, Frank, you're a sound effects man, always fooling around with electronic devices. Tell me, do you suppose robots would enjoy listening to music? No, I'm not joking. You figure that if robots are electronic creations, they'd enjoy listening to electronic music. So by utilizing a variable frequency audio generator, you think you could create a scientific symphony. It would not only send our metal friends, but would also be fascinating to human ears. Would you be willing to work on it? I can't wait to hear it.
Я твой слуга, я твой работник.
Seekers, but I'm kind of losing it over this. Anyone who knows Forrest J. Ackerman understands my grief. I mean, on one level, Forry was the goofy old guy who told those excruciating groaner puns at Dragon Con. But to me and to thousands and thousands and thousands more, he was old Grandpa Vampire. A Mr. Rogers for the subgenius set. And oh, how Forry indulges the freaks. Oh, our lamest slapped together cardboard dreams took glorious, graceful flight under his joyously approving grin. I mean, hell, Forry was even Ed Wood's agent during the final days. If that isn't indulging the freaks, I don't know what is. Oh, but anybody with a dream had Forry's respect. And he had a respect for the throwaway things that our culture rejects. And he kept them safe for future generations who would care about them. Oh, yes, the Acker Mansion was a beautiful place. Oh, the things and wonders you could see in there. Oh, the Willis O'Brien dinosaur models from the original King Kong. Oh, yeah, they were rotting off of their metal armatures, but he had them in a glass case, and you could still see them. Dracula's ring, death masks of Lon Chaney Jr. I mean, Forry had it all, and he had it in one place where everybody could come by and look at it and revere it. Oh, and every Saturday, Forry would throw open the doors to the Acker Mansion to anyone who wanted to see the collection. Anybody. Fans came from the four corners of the earth to thrill to Forry's collection and to pay tribute to him. And he was so happy to just have people see his things. If you needed access to the 100,000 books or the 100,000 movie stills to do research, Forry opened his doors and his heart to you. Forry gave so much to our history. And Forey gave so much of himself that there are thousands of people all over the world who treasure little moments that they had with him because he truly loved the freaks. Oh, Forrest J. Ackerman was a god. The Acker Mansion was a shrine. Famous Monsters was our Bible. But Prince Sergey is coming to claim his own. And Forrest will be up there with his beloved one day and once again. How to be reunited with Bella and Boris and beloved friends of his who've gone on before, like Robert Bloch. Oh yes, Bob Bloch, the author of Psycho. He was a bosom buddy of Forrest. Despite his writings, he was the kind of sweet guy who'd have hot fudge sundaes for lunch while he was telling us about his latest axe murder he was following in the news. Oh, yeah. Oh, Bob and Forey formed two parts of a triangle, and the other third was Ray Bradbury. These three young visionaries put on the first science fiction convention in 1939, wearing homemade costumes designed from Pulp Fiction covers. Forey's is still hanging up in the Acker Mansion. Had those little puff things on the shoulders, you know. Oh, yes. Forey helped keep science fiction alive. He kept the monsters alive. And he did it with warmth and love. His influence lives on in the term sci-fi. Oh, yes, when stereo was in its infancy, hi-fi was all the rage, and Forey's inveterate love of puns, he had to turn it around. He used hi-fi to make sci-fi. Oh, and a certain hacked-off, washed-up runt, speculative fiction author raised a snarky stink about it. Harlan Ellison. Ah, but he's working for a certain cable channel. Ah, and if that slimy little worm wants to get that check, he's gonna have to say sci-fi. And every time that leprous little sellout chokes out the word sci-fi, a monster gets its wings. So dance, you little monkey! Dance for Forey! Oh, I know Forey wouldn't take glee in his downfall, but I sure as hell do, because I'm a child of Famous Monsters of Filmland, and I'm standing tall to say, Forey, we love you and thank you for what you gave us. You were there for us with the monsters. We will never let your memory fade from this stinking planet. Not as long as there are subgeniuses, because we know what you understood so well. We need our monsters. And we're not going to give them up. Including you. Our sweet, sweet grandpa vampire. We love you, Forey.
Gonna another day. And he'll be your friend. And you'll say, hey,
oh, Seekers, as you can no doubt tell, tonight has been a very difficult show for me to do. I love Forrest J. Ackerman. Oh, and there are so many other people who do, and they too tonight had gifts to bring to lay at the feet of the master. First and foremost was St. Byron Werner's taped copy of a rare Forrest J. Ackerman album from, I guess it was the early 60s, called The Tin Age. I'm so glad I happened to find that tape just in time. And then the Pink Lincolns were there. Their gift to Forrie was Monsters. Yes, my TV and magazines had Monsters, and thanks to Forrie, they always will. That first version of Mechanical Man, that was St. Byron Werner and Donovan Suit, Rural War Room. The Cramps love Forrie too, and their gift for him was a creature from the Black Leather Lagoon. The second version of Devo's Mechanical Man there, that was the Humanoids, from not necessarily beautiful but mutated number 7. Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet collaborated with Charles Burns to do the monster story from Big Baby. Man or Astro Man were there to paint a picture of Gargantua's Last Stand. Then we had the Incredibly Strange Creatures trailer, followed by the Ubangis with Monster a Go-Go. And then Monster Surfer by Frank N. Stein and the Abominable Surfmen. And Kraftwerk from The Mix, a new version of The Robots. And Tom Owen wrapped it up with a message that we need to take to heart. Don't kill the monster. And thanks to all of the Seekers out there, our favorite monster will live eternally. Good night, Seekers.
This is Forrest J. Ackerman, the Acker Monster, speaking to you from Horrorwood, California. And don't you dare call me chicken just because I have my cape on.